Game on, boyfriend.
Are you about to dispute my official ruling in the sacred tradition of nose goes?
Technically correct.
I should have known. She didn't like me. I don't think anybody likes you.
I like me.
With Tyler Bischoff.
Okay, the zone's not working.
They're a little bit too good to cover man to man. And we can't shoot for shit.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Hello, blonde mustaches. We have Raiders rumors to get to. We have dropped the ball ever since I said I want to be the leading place on Raiders rumors. We didn't do any of them yesterday. So we'll get to Raiders rumors.
Ryan Wallace was too good.
He was. We'll start with the Golden Knights. Damn vegans. I've been telling you for weeks the regular season doesn't matter. Vegas is the three seed in the Pacific. The regular season is too long. These games are irrelevant. But they play the Calgary Flames tonight. And I actually have some reasons why tonight's game against Calgary can be viewed as important. First off, the standings could potentially change above Vegas, which would change the first round matchup. It has been Calgary, San Jose, Vegas for a while. San Jose is just 3 points behind Calgary, though. So if the Golden Knights beat Calgary tonight, it could help change the matchup in the first round for the Golden Knights from San Jose to Calgary. I don't really know which one Vegas would prefer to play, but they can sort of influence that. Control is probably not the right word, but they do have the rest of the season. They will play Calgary twice and San Jose twice the rest of the way. So Vegas will have some say in who their first round matchup will be. So, like, for example, if they wanted San Jose in the first round, they could tank the games against Calgary on purpose and then beat San Jose, and that would help Calgary win the division and play San Jose in the first round, and do it opposite if you wanted to play Calgary in the first round. They won't do that, but I am all for teams purposely losing and manipulating their first round matchups. Like, that's how you know your regular season is too long, when teams can manipulate what's going to happen and it's not going to punish that team at all. So there is some importance with regards to the actual seedings and what the first round matchup will be for Vegas, and that obviously has some importance to it. So beating Calgary tonight would give the Golden Knights a slightly better chance at playing Calgary in the first round as opposed to San Jose. The other part of this that I think you can say means something is Vegas beating the teams that are better than them. We've talked about this before, but there are four teams in the West that are ahead of the Golden Knights. That's how dumb and long the regular season is. There are four teams ahead of the Golden Knights in the West, and it's been that way for like 3 months now. Like, it's been Calgary, San Jose, Winnipeg, Nashville. Those are the top four. Vegas is fifth. Like, it's just been that way for like 3 months. Stupid. But those top four teams, the Golden Knights are 3-6-0 against those teams. If you look at the rest of the schedule, again, two more with Calgary, two more with San Jose. They do have a one with Winnipeg as well. They are done with the Predators. So five games left against teams that they would conceivably have to beat to get to the Stanley Cup final. And when you look at playoffs, it's all about the matchup. So what Vegas does against Vancouver and Anaheim last week, that's not relevant at all to how they're going to match up with the Sharks or the Flames in the first round of the playoffs. But what they do against the Sharks and the Flames is relevant to how they're going to match up with those teams in the playoffs, because conceivably those are the two teams they're going to have to beat to get to the Western Conference Final. And then Winnipeg and Nashville is probably who you'd have to beat in the Western Conference Final. So you have these matchups with these good teams. These are the ones that you should probably pay the most attention to. They lose to Vancouver, beat Vancouver 4-1. Who cares?
Okay. How stupid would it be to treat these two games against Calgary and San Jose as like, let's just go mess with them?
Just play something completely opposite of what they'll actually do?
Yeah. Like the old yeah. Rocky, okay, no, you're
I could
gonna,
enjoy that.
We're going to have you fight right-handed.
I could enjoy that. That would be fun.
Just, okay, Reeves, top line.
Yep. Just do a bunch of stupid stuff.
Yeah, basically. And just have, like, the other team's coach just be like, are they crazy? Has he finally lost it?
Yeah. No, I would be
and
down for that.
And then you show up to the playoffs and are like, nah, we're actually just going to.
Yeah, no, the regular season's too long and, like, these games effectively don't matter. So I'm all on board, like, doing
Nate Schmidt, go play forward.
Yeah, I'm all on board doing stupid things that just to manipulate or just to throw people off or whatever. Like, it's great. Be terrific. You want some John Merrill stats?
I just can't believe that I referred to him as Fall Down Man for so long.
I have fun John Merrill stats. Ryan was on yesterday, and I asked why Merrill is good, and jokingly called him the best defenseman on the team. These are season-long stats, too, by the way. These are not just recently. This is over the entire course of this season. John Merrill leads the Golden Knights defensemen in Corsi at 57%. So when he's on the ice, the Golden Knights basically have more possession than when any other defenseman is on the ice. When Merrill is on the ice, the Golden Knights allow 22.6 scoring chances per 60 minutes. That's the lowest mark among Golden Knights defensemen. When John Merrill is on the ice, the Golden Knights allow 8.8 high danger chances per 60 minutes. That's the lowest mark on the Golden Knights. So when John Merrill's out there, the Golden Knights have their best possession numbers of any other defenseman, and they eliminate scoring and high danger chances more than any other defenseman. So yeah, the guy you've been describing as Fall Down Guy is the best statistical Golden Knights defenseman.
Well, in my defense,
he does fall down a lot.
He falls down. When he falls down, though, he takes up more room on the ice, so it's harder to shoot past him.
It's a good strategy. So, like, John Merrill's... the analytics on John Merrill this year are really good, and there is one, I guess, problem with John Merrill's numbers this year is the goals for when he's on the ice. They're only 27-26. So, like, they're basically even in terms of goals when John Merrill's on the ice. So, like, they're dominating the advanced stats, but the actual goal production is pretty even when John Merrill's out there.
Is that a pair? Could that be attributed to more like a pairing issue, or is it more
over the course of the season? It's a team poor shooting percentage. They're shooting. Okay. I can't remember. I didn't put it in my notes. It's like 7% or something when he's on the ice. So like their team shooting percentage is very, very low when John Merrill's out there, which is probably not directly attributed to John Merrill because he's not the one taking all those shots.
Maybe
he should shoot more. More on John Merrill. If you look at his career, when he was in New Jersey for 4 years, his Corsi those 4 years was 53%, 45%, 46%, 48%. So his career, he was under 50% Corsi player. Comes to Vegas last year, he was right at 50%. This year, he's at 57%. Like, that's a huge jump. And it's his career high. Like, his average was, he was just sort of an average, slightly below average as far as possession metrics. Now he is unbelievable. His scoring chance percentage, his high danger chance percentage are also at career highs. But this is my favorite John Merrill stat. Among NHL defensemen this year that have played at least 500 minutes, so that's 189 defensemen, John Merrill is fourth in the entire league in Corsi. He's seventh in scoring chance percentage, fourth in high danger chance percentage. So, like, not only is he, like, have some of the best analytics on the Golden Knights, he's top 10 in the league in defenseman analytics.
Sorry, Fall Down Guy's good. All right.
So, yeah.
You just, like, blinded me with science there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how to react to that.
So, like, he's not necessarily producing goals. And, like, when John Merrill's on the ice, the Golden Knights aren't producing a ton of offensive chances. But when he's on the ice, they don't give up anything, pretty much. Like, nobody is getting any good chances when John Merrill's on the ice. It's terrific. If we look at Mark Stone now, who I told you guys yesterday, I'm rooting for him to not score because it'll make Ryan Wallace's job harder to explain why he is good. First off, fun stat, Oscar Lindberg has now scored 2 goals for the Ottawa Senators. Mark Stone has yet to score since the trade deadline. George McPhee clearly lost that trade. You cannot argue differently. But regardless of the goals.
Scoreboard.
Exactly. The advanced stats since joining Vegas. This one actually isn't that advanced, but he hasn't been on the ice for an opponent's goal. Mark Stone has not. So when he's been out there, Vegas hasn't allowed a goal at all. No other Golden Knight can say that this year. That's actually played. Like, Jake Bischoff could say it, but he hasn't actually played. But his advanced stats through 4 games, his Corsi is 64%. That's better than anybody on the roster right now. When he's on the ice, the Golden Knights are only allowing 5.6 high danger chances per 60 minutes. That's the best for the Golden Knights. He was at 10.2, by the way, in Ottawa this year, so that'll likely adjust and go a little bit higher, but Vegas is better than Ottawa, so it might not climb that much higher. Pretty much all of his numbers with Vegas are better than they were with Ottawa, with one exception. Team goals per 60 minutes is actually down with Vegas than they were with Ottawa. So they're not allowing anything with Mark Stone out there. But the goals aren't really following as they should. So I'd expect the second line to actually start scoring more than they have in the last four games. Just because Mark Stone is, when he's on the ice, they're really good. And they just haven't found the goals. There is one other note. They've played four bad teams. I guess Dallas is a playoff team. But they've played four bad teams. So maybe tonight against Calgary, that might start readjusting. Should I have ended with John Merrill is the best defenseman in the NHL?
I mean, it would have been a very early end to the first segment.
That's true. But John Merrill is the best defenseman in the NHL.
Well, I actually had another I had a follow-up question to my pairings, but it was mostly just like, do they do splits based on goalie?
I could probably figure that out, but I don't. I mean, Fleury's played enough that it's not going to have that big of a statistical difference.
Okay.
Like the amount of games Subban and the one that Legacy played is not going to be that significant.
Oh, I totally assume that the sample size is way too small, but
I do live on the small sample size, so
it just seems like when I'm watching Subban in goal, he's in front of Subban's face a disproportionate amount of time. That's just like, well, no, of course Subban couldn't see. John Merrill was just standing there.
So he should fall down more so that Subban can see.
Well, I think he's smart enough. I must be some sort of connection with Fleury where he's like,
he knows when to
fall
down.
Fuck
it out of here.
Then Fleury's like, cool, got it.
Totally correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the BeConnected Sports app downloaded. If you use Pay Near Me, you can deposit money into your account at CVS Pharmacy, 7-Elevens, or Family Dollar Stores. It's the BeConnected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter at @Bischoff_Tyler.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV has clinched a first-round bye in the Mountain West Tournament.
Air Force needed five specific games to go their way, two of which were played last night, and neither one did. They lost to Nevada, but Utah State went and won at Colorado State, and when Utah State did that, UNLV clinched the five seed. They're locked into the five. They can't do better or worse, so Colorado State on Saturday is a meaningless game for UNLV.
We're going to get a lot of Woodbury, a lot of Hamilton.
Break Jay Green's redshirt.
Ooh.
They will play either Fresno State or San Diego State in the first round.
New back!
Colorado State better watch out. They will play either Fresno State or San Diego State in the first round. Those two teams play tonight. Winner is the 3 seed. Loser is the 4 seed. So the games on Saturday will literally mean nothing for UNLV's first round matchup. They'll be locked into the 5, and whoever loses tonight will be locked in to the 4 seed. What if you're UNLV, what you should be cheering for, what I think you should be cheering for, I think between Fresno State and San Diego State, you want to play San Diego State. I think that is a much better matchup. They shoot a lot of mid-range jumpers. Fresno State shoots a ton of threes. So San Diego State, more likely to be inefficient. I think you're more likely to beat San Diego State. So I think you want Fresno State to win tonight. That gives you San Diego State in the first round. And then I think you want San Diego State to beat Nevada on Saturday, because that would give Utah State the number 1 seed. And if you're UNLV, I think you have a better chance at beating Utah State than you do at beating Nevada. I do not think this team can guard Nevada. Don't think they have a chance. I think they have a much better chance at guarding Sam Merrill than they do either of the Martin twins, because Sam Merrill is not 6'7".
It's so confusing. Utah State can beat Nevada. We can't beat Nevada, but we can.
I don't think UNLV can beat either one. But the more likely one I think they could knock out is Utah State. You could make the argument they'd be more likely to beat Nevada if Nevada is terrible from three, because that is, they're not a great three-point shooting team this year. So I could see that argument, but I just think Nevada, we've seen it twice. They overwhelm them in the first half. And then, yeah, UNLV plays better in the second half, but they've been overwhelmed twice in the first half by Nevada simply because they're just bigger.
And muscle, yeah. They just, there's the rim. Thank you. Yeah. I'll take that.
They're just bigger. And, like, Sam Merrill might end up winning player of the year in the Mountain West this year, but you're not going to get overpowered. Like, there's some finesse to Sam Merrill that he uses to beat you, and finesse can come and go.
Kaur Justin will return to UNLV next season.
He played in 8 games, injured his knee, done for the year. He's getting his degree at the end of the semester, so he had options. He could go pro, he could grad transfer, but according to the Las Vegas Sun, Mike Romalo is reporting that he is going to come back. So effectively for UNLV, it's like getting a grad transfer for UNLV for 1 year. Be the best, one of the best players on the team next year. Justin, if you go back to his first year at UNLV, it was 15 points, 10 rebounds a game, and he shot 64% from the floor. This year, he only played 8 games, so it's not a full season sample size, but he only shot 44%. His shooting percentage had dropped by 20%, 11 points, 9 rebounds. His efficiency took a huge dip without Brandon McCoy. And that's one of my curiosities for Justin coming back. How efficient can he be? Because that's why he's so good, is because, at junior college, I think he shot 67% at junior college. And then this year, his first year at UNLV, I should say, if Shakur Justin caught the ball within 8 feet of the basket, he was going to score. Like, that's just how it was for UNLV. But this year, he was number one on the scouting report. Teams were able to play him more aggressively because it was Mbaki Zhang, not Brandon McCoy, on offense with him. So I'm curious what Shakur Justin they get. Because if they get a 44% shooter in Shakur Justin, that's not going to make a big difference next year. Like, that's not going to help a whole lot. But if they get a guy that shoots 64% from the floor, like, that's huge. And that'll actually make them significantly better. It'll make the roster significantly better. I'm also a little bit terrified that Menzies is going to go back big next year in the starting lineup. We'll talk about that later. We will. But I'm very terrified. Although Justin maybe shoots threes now, so that maybe it'll be big, but Justin kind of helps by shooting threes.
Leon Rice lost part of a tooth after losing to UNLV.
This is a tweet from BJ Raines, who covers Boise State, and he said, with no time to see the dentist, Rice glued the tooth back in by himself using special dentistry glue. His wife watched a video online and told him how to do it. So far, it's still holding strong. Tervell Beck must have gotten him in the handshake line. B, how do you only lose part of your tooth without it being like a violent smack to the face?
Do you want me to answer this honestly? Because you know I have bad teeth.
Have you ever lost part of your tooth?
Yeah.
How?
That was good.
That was good. Just part of your tooth?
Yes, it just falls out.
Should I turn the mic over to you again?
Probably not.
I don't understand how Leon Rice lost a tooth.
Moving on. Rolling on. The Aviators sold out of tickets for opening night in less than 10 minutes.
Did you buy any? Oh, no, you're waiting for the promo schedule.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's a good sign for
them. I like to pick and choose.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good sign for them. I hope the Summerlin moves long-term success for the Aviators. Like, get enough people in there, and they see that logo, and they demand it to be changed. But, like, I do hope it works for them. Like, because you have, you know, first game of the season is obviously going to be a hot ticket. But it's you have the idea of newness with the stadium in Summerlin. And it's the same thing like the Aces and the Lights are going to have this year. Like last year, those were two new teams. And it was like, oh, this is cool. We have a little soccer team. We have a WNBA team. Can they sustain when it's no longer the new thing? When it's no longer like, oh, let's go see this shiny new toy. So I'm curious, like, how long do the Aviators in their new stadium in Summerlin, how long do they keep, you know, having this sort of demand? Hopefully it's a long time. Like, hopefully it's somewhat. You're terrified to talk, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
This is going to be a good rest of the show.
Oh, good God. I'm passionate about dental health. The Mountain West will participate in a new bowl game in Los Angeles.
That is according to Stadium. So when the Raiders Stadium opens here, the Mountain West is getting booted out, just like Jarrett's tooth. Booted out of the Las Vegas Bowl. The Las Vegas Bowl will be a Pac-12 school against either an SEC or Big Ten school. They'll rotate through the years there. In response, the Mountain West is going to get a new bowl game that's going to be in L.A. It's going to be in the Rams and Chargers new stadium. It's basically going to be the same setup as the Mountain West Bowl, where it's the Mountain West champ against a Pac-12 team. So basically, the Las Vegas Bowl is just, as far as the Mountain West is concerned, is just moving to Los Angeles. It's not, I think it's pretty solid by the Mountain West. Like, they basically, their marquee bowl game was stolen from them. And they managed to turn around and get another big city in L.A. and a brand new stadium and keep their Power 5 conference matchup. Like, to me, it's like, that's a great move. Because they could have been much worse. They could have been like, all right, we're at a new bowl game. It's in El Paso. They already play one in El Paso. Yeah, it's going to be the second best bowl game in El Paso. Like, that's what could have happened there. So
we will be the North Dakota State Bowl.
Right. So instead, they're going to be in L.A. in a brand new stadium. Pretty good. Every time I look at it, it just appears.
The NHL is considering making players go to the bench if they lose their helmet on the ice.
The GMs approved this rule change this week. The NHLPA still has to approve it. But basically, if you lose your helmet and stay on the ice, you get called for a penalty. Head safety. Look at the NHL go.
You know what's bad about all this is that they also discussed banning cursing on the ice.
I saw you tweet out that link.
I was going to make a joke. And
now you're afraid of it?
Yeah.
See, I saw you tweet out that link, and I could not find that anywhere else. Like, that Yahoo story mentioned that they were going to somehow penalize cussing. Nobody else in the world mentioned that besides that Yahoo story. Because I thought that was interesting, but the story on Yahoo didn't have much detail to it. It was just like,
it was a listicle.
It was just right? Like, let's tone down the cussing or something. And I'm like, well, that's not, like, what's the actual rule? Are you getting punished if you drop the F word on live radio or what? So I didn't know what it was, and I tried to find it somewhere else, and it didn't exist anywhere else. But yeah, that was possibly another thing. They're like, oh, there's too much cussing in hockey.
Not mad at all about it.
Which seems ridiculous. But yeah, the NHL's, the point, though, is the NHL's actually like, oh, head safety. If you lose your helmet, you shouldn't be on the ice. Look at them. I'm impressed.
Or at least it's got a strap, dude. Just
buckle it up.
Just buckle it up.
Buckle it up.
It is not hard to beat a team three times in one season.
Oh, don't you love cliches? They're so much fun. So Jordan Sperber on Twitter had a fun chart. This is over the last 10 years, teams that went 2-0 against another team went 72% of the time that they matched up with that team for the third meeting that year. So we're going to get to the Mountain West tournament. UNLV is going to play San Diego State in the first round, maybe. And I guarantee it, if you're watching that on TV, somebody will say, oh, it's going to be hard for the Aztecs to beat the Rebels for the third time this season. Not true. Almost three-fourths of the time, the team that won the first two meetings wins the third one. Because guess what? If you beat a team twice in a season, it means you're probably a lot better than that team. That's how that normally works.
You consistently know how to stop them.
Yeah. So playing them a third time, not that big of a deal. So yeah, you're definitely going to hear that. You'll probably hear it with UNLV if they play San Diego State in the first round, or if they beat San Diego State and they get Nevada in the second round, you'll probably hear it again. Doesn't matter. I love so much when cliches get murdered with stats. Like, that might be my favorite thing ever. Like, here's a cliche that everybody says. Yeah, that is not true at all. That's the furthest possible thing from the truth. So much fun.
And see, it infuriates me, not as much as losing a tooth, but it infuriates me whenever someone uses statistics to go, and then, you know, you got to get into the momentum, and it's like, dude, you just invalidated your own expertise.
Wait,
by...
you mean momentum's not a stat?
Oh, no. It's also not a real thing.
Somebody did tell me on Twitter yesterday that winning is an intangible, despite winning being a very tangible thing.
Do we really have to go scoreboard on people? Like, no, like the final Well, speaking of,
it's the most tangible thing in sports is winning and losing. You get
a, like, there's a column and then there's another column. Sometimes you get weird ones like soccer where you're like, whoa, there's a third column. But for the most part, yes, no, tie.
All right. Strap in. According to SB Nation's Bill Connolly, the worst teams of the last 40 years in football per S&P Plus are number 5, the 1982 Illinois State, number 4, 2000 LMU, number 3, 87, I believe it's New Mexico State University, number 2, the 2004 FAMU, their one FBS year, and number 1, first place, 1995 UNLV Rebels.
So the worst, the least efficient football team of the last 40 years was the 1995 UNLV team.
Which on Sega, I have used to win a national championship.
There's a college football game from the 1995?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's called like Road to Hawaii.
What? Was the championship in Hawaii?
Yeah. I think
Why were you going to Hawaii?
I don't know.
So you can play with the worst football team in the last 40 years?
Yeah, and it's really hard to run the option.
Are they any good?
No, they are not.
They lose a lot? Do you lose a lot with them?
No, but that's...
Who won the national title in 95? You should go play them. Nebraska, I think it was.
That does sound right.
You should go play UNLV against Nebraska. Do you still have it actively?
No, but it's... what I do during certain shows.
Oh, okay, yes. You should play UNLV 95 against Nebraska and let us know how that turns out for you.
Okay, not a problem.
That's all I want from you.
I do. I believe I have a picture of UNLV beating Duke, like, 35-12 that I send to Mark Seidel every once in a while.
All right, we've got Raiders rumors coming up next. Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Kyler Murray, all of them. But first, every day, I give you a look inside Bischoff's briefs. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth? It is because of Manscaped.com. Whenever Bischoff's briefs get hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
They twist on it.
They did.
A twist, and it's
turned it around.
We should have thought of that.
We were so
but it's still a stupid.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever.
Yeah, it's just a little turnabout.
Tyler Bischoff is Technically Correct.
I have a terrified producer. He's still scared. All right, we got Raiders rumors. We got to be the home of this.
Yep.
There are so many media members that cover the NFL. Complete opposite of UNLV basketball. This is from Matt Verderame of FanSided. The Raiders have, quote, significant interest in Le'Veon Bell.
So are we... like, are the Raiders just going to be Steelers West?
Yes, that is the plan. Bell is going to be a free agent on March 13th. The Raiders have a lot of cap space. They don't really have a running back. I mean, they have guys that play the position, but they don't really have a running back. Marshawn Lynch could come back, but Doug Martin's not inspiring anybody.
Is he going to get dressed, drug tested?
No, of course not.
Okay.
Marshawn Lynch. I have two takes on this. One, it would be dumb. Don't spend big money on a running back. Terrible way to spend the cap if you're trying to build a team that's going to win. You want a good quarterback, good pass rushers, like the one they traded away. But two, please, dear God, sign Le'Veon Bell. It'd just be fun. It'd be so great. Trade for Antonio Brown. Draft DK Metcalf. Instantly fun.
They're going to have to put up like 50 points
yes.
to win.
Yeah. Instantly fun. That's what we're talking about. Also, Adam Schefter. We have dual reports here. Adam Schefter reported that the Steelers are expecting to have a deal in place by Friday for Antonio Brown. We also have Josina Anderson reporting that it is currently a one-team race for Antonio Brown. And I just like to imagine that John Gruden is bidding against himself for Antonio Brown.
All right. We'll go two first rounders.
The Steelers, they hear it and they're like, that is too good of a deal to pass up. But somebody's like, wait, like 5 minutes?
He'll call us back.
He'll call us back with more. And John Gruden just keeps doing that. Like, he's just paranoid. That he's like, all right, I know my brother's offering you more. I'll up the offer. I hope that's what's happening. That'd be so funny.
It'd be so embarrassing if he traded three first-round picks for a, like, all right, so you traded a first-round pick for Amari Cooper. That was actually good job. Good for you. And then you flipped it into an older wide receiver.
I don't know. I like the idea of somebody bidding against themselves. Like, what is a one-team race? Because that's the phrase Josina Anderson used. Like, what is a one-team race? Like, are they aware there are other people racing or not? Or are they just blinders on, running straight as fast as they can? We got to get Antonio Brown. But then we have the big rumor, Jared. This is a tweet from Benjamin Albright. And it's a screenshot of a text message. We have no idea who it's from or who it was sent to. Just a screenshot of a random text message. Could just be some guy drunk at a bar. No idea, but Benjamin Albright tweeted it, so we're taking it as a Raiders rumor. Here's what the tweet said. Gruden trying to pull off Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and Kyler Murray.
He would be my hero.
Let's do it! And, like, they can legitimately get all three.
Yeah.
Like,
but, I mean, that would be the most, like, we know what Derek Carr is, and we just went lateral, and that's absolutely fine by me.
Like, okay, they can sign Le'Veon Bell. That just cost them money. They do have to trade for Antonio Brown. Conceivably, it's a late first-round pick.
Okay, money is kind of an issue.
Stop bringing it up. I know.
We're just
talking about the possibility. Like, how possible is it? They can trade a late first-round pick for Antonio Brown, conceivably, and then draft Kyler Murray. Now, a lot of people think Arizona is going to take him at number one, which would therefore make him unavailable to the Raiders at number four. That's the biggest problem in this. But conceivably, Kyler Murray could be there at four, draft Kyler Murray, and then, hell, you still have another first-round pick. Might even be able to take DK Metcalf. Again, going to have to score 55 points, but they might. Let me ask you this. If they put together a skill position core, like if their wide receivers were, their top three wide receivers next year were Antonio Brown, Jordy Nelson, DK Metcalf, and their running backs groups was Le'Veon Bell, we'll leave Doug Martin on the roster, I guess, and Chris Warren or Jalen Richard. Is that top 10 in the league at skill positions? Is it top five?
I mean, if Jordy Nelson were to somehow be removed and replaced with...
Listen, Jordy Nelson is fine if he's not your number one receiver. If you have Antonio Brown, Jordy Nelson is fine.
If you don't, need,
him,
if you don't need him to beat anybody or to get open or
fine.
To, like, run...
We're not talking about how does this roster look in 5 years. We're talking about next year, he'll be fine. He outran that one guy.
He was getting caught from behind by defensive ends.
But, like, listen, it would be somewhat of an, you know, ignoring defense, which was a big problem last year. I think the Raiders gave up the most points in the NFL. But the Raiders could conceivably go from, oh, Jared Cook is the best skill position guy on the team, to, holy hell, they're, like, top five in the league in skill position guys. I mean, granted, they still wouldn't have a tight end, but if you have Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and then, you know, a Jordy Nelson, a Doug Martin, a DK Metcalf to compliment him, that's really good.
I'm just trying to think, like, Antonio Gates every year threatens to retire. Bring him in for
bring
a
him
year.
Over? Okay. Let's do that.
He's like 40.
So
he remembers John Gruden the first time.
So we are, by the way, we are getting beat in the Raiders rumors. The International Business Times had a story on Derek Carr, and it was pure aggregation, just like we're doing here. Like, they didn't have their own sources. They were just taking, oh, somebody else is saying this. But they had the headline, and this headline destroying us when it comes to covering Raiders rumors. This was their headline. NFL rumors. Raiders could have secret plans for Derek Carr.
What does that even mean?
It is brilliant, because of course you're going to click on that. secret plans for Derek Carr. What are they? And then it literally was just him saying, so-and-so is reporting that Derek Carr might get traded. Like, that's all it was like the Carr could get traded. But they used the phrase secret. Like,
we're going to have him start lining up at wide receiver.
I need to start, like, every one of our shows, I need to title it with secret plans somewhere in
Marvin
there.
Marvin Minzy's secret plan.
Like, the secret John Merrill stats. That's going to be the title of today's show. Because, of course, you're going to have secret plans. Oh, this is going to be great. It's nothing special, but it made you click. Like, that is amazing. They're beating us at this. Whatever the international business, whoever their headline writer is terrific. That guy is awesome because he's like, oh, secret plans. That's a good phrase to use.
I get 10 cents a click. I'm about to make me $100.
Right? Because I clicked on it and my first thought was like somehow they have to manipulate the cap and do it at a certain date to like cut him or trade him or do whatever. Like I thought it was going to be something like that. And then there was the thought of like, oh, they're going to make him, you know, be the backup to Kyler Murray and mentor him and it's going to be a secret or something like that. But then it's just, no. Some guy said on Twitter he might get traded. Like, oh, well, that wasn't that secret. I saw it on Twitter already. But they got me. They got me good. And that's what I aspire to be. No meat.
Oh.
Just a good headline.
Oh, man. The journalistic equivalent of the fast food menu. You look at it and you go, oh, that looks good. I'll take that. And then when you get it, you're like, that does not look like that.
We try to surprise Jesse Granger from City National Arena next.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. It's time to hear what Jesse Granger sees.
It seemed like they were in the right position, but just not getting their sticks on the guys. Is that what you saw?
Is that what you saw, Jesse?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay, perfect. Okay, perfect. Perfect.
Fight. Jesse Granger's eyes. Good enough for The Athletic. Not good enough for Gerard Gallant.
What does Jesse Granger see?
Right now I see a very optional morning skate. Only five forwards and a handful of defensemen out here on the ice, so these guys are taking it easy before tonight's game.
Unbelievable. They're just mailing it in. We can blame this morning skate if they lose tonight.
Or they're taking the advice we've been saying all season, which is stay fresh for the playoffs because these games are meaningless.
They are meaningless. There we go. All right, what's the most ridiculous fan you see right now?
Most ridiculous fan is a man that's been waving this flag since I got here. I think he's been waving it for about 7 days straight without leaving that spot. So.
He's just standing in one spot in City National waving his flag.
I'm going to guess his arms are ripped, though, because I don't think I could wave a flag for longer than like an hour without having to stop.
Right. You got
to
be careful. He's going to beat you up with that flag once he hears this.
Yes.
All right. One serious question for you. Do they match up better in the playoffs with Calgary or San Jose?
I think they match up better with San Jose just because they've played better against San Jose historically. And I think the San Jose defense that takes a lot of chances, Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, are obviously offensive-minded guys. And when you take chances, it can lead to transition the other way. And that's where the Golden Knights excel. So I guess San Jose. But to be honest, I don't think either is a terrible matchup just because goaltending becomes so much more important in the playoffs. And the biggest flaw in both of the teams in the Pacific Division, Calgary and San Jose, is their goaltending, and obviously the Golden Knights aren't worried about theirs. Flurry.
Okay, so I have this great idea, and Tyler agrees.
Probably not. I don't know what this idea is.
He agrees. Don't worry about it. These last couple games don't really matter. Why don't they just go absolutely like crazy with the lineups? Just to like throw people completely off the scent of what they're doing.
Well, these coaches aren't idiots. If they come out here with Ryan Reeves on the first line, I don't think Pete DeBoer is.
Oh, you were listening.
Oh, my God. That's what we're expecting in the first round. So I think right now, I do agree with you, these games are meaningless and you can play with your lineup, but you shouldn't do it to screw with the other team. You should do it to try to find a combination. And I think they have kind of been doing that. They've moved Tuck down to that third line. These last 15 games are all about finding the perfect recipe for the playoffs. So, yeah, you can move some lines around, maybe give yourself a slightly less chance of winning that game that night because those 2 points are less important than figuring out your optimal lineup for the playoffs.
Thank you, Jesse.
No problem.
That was less fun.
You seem disappointed in his answer.
Well, I also wanted to ask, like, if him and Ryan go to a restaurant, like, are they trying to decide on a restaurant? Like, how do they figure that out?
Do people eat with Ryan?
I don't know. We had the guy on the phone.
We should go eat with Ryan. Can we go eat with Ryan? Whoa, we need to make Mike Grimala go eat with Ryan. How do we set this up? If you're unaware, Ryan Wallace is a vegan, and Mike Grimala eats...
nothing.
Plain chicken. That's it. Nothing else. So we need to set up Ryan Wallace and Mike Grimala eating, right? Like Ryan Wallace taking Mike Grimala to a restaurant? Or cooking for Mike Grimala? That's asking Ryan to do a lot of work.
Yeah, but. And do you think that, like, do we have to set it up where Grimala knows that he's going to be eating vegan food? Or would we have to set it up like, nah, dude, it's pizza. Just eat it, you weirdo.
I guess Mike is very, he's very suspicious of, like, hey, let's go
he
do this.
He got a brick of lasagna, and he had to, like, full on.
He's not, like, he doesn't dive head first into things, so, you know, he'd be, like, very skeptical. So I was like, hey, let's go get lunch. Get in the car, I'm driving. Like, he would not
put this blindfold on.
Yes, it's gonna be fine, I promise.
Ignore Mike. Jared giggling in the back.
Well, everybody does that every day. It's become immune to it in this city.
Oh, fair enough.
All right, so we are doing...
Did
you have something else?
No.
Oh, okay. We are doing a giveaway for Mountain West tournament tickets. We have all session passes for the men's tournament. We're giving them away on Twitter, or you can email us. You gonna say something?
Yeah, I was gonna say you can see all the great teams. You can see Utah State. You can see Nevada. You can see Boise. You can see Fresno. And I think, I mean, Air Force is gonna be there too. So you could see a ton of great talent.
You did not deliver that joke very well.
I did not. I'm still scared.
So the way we're doing it, I put out a tweet. You can also email me, but put out a tweet basically saying, you know, tell us who your favorite current running Rebel is. And why? Gotten a bunch of responses, a lot of good answers too. And like, it's, there's like genuine niceness. Like, I feel solely responsible for creating the most positivity on Twitter around UNLV basketball this year.
I mean, fair enough. I can't.
It's a very low bar to clear, yeah, but I feel like I am solely responsible for it. Like, it's a toxic season.
It's also, yeah, the fan base is very much. They're mad at you for not being mean enough, and then they're mad at you for being too mean. And it's like,
it's fun.
No one in the middle.
But it's been a toxic season, but I enjoy that UNLV fans have things about this team they enjoy. Like, the team's not going to the NCAA tournament. Like, it's a season that if you judge college basketball solely on the NCAA tournament, this year means nothing because they're not going to the NCAA tournament. But people still enjoy things about this team. They still enjoy things about the players, and I'm glad that that still exists. I'm glad that you guys still enjoy it, even if it's not an NCAA tournament team, even if there is so much, like every time something happens with this team, there's just toxicity around it. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad. It's just the end of the world is happening. So thank you. I appreciate it.
We also have a block of
lights tickets. We have an entire section. So tomorrow we're going to have Eric Winalda in studio and a player
to be named later.
Yeah, I guess is what's happening there. They're going to be in studio. I still don't know how I'm giving these away. You should probably figure that out.
I mean, thus far, if you approach us and say, yes, I'd like to take my son and our daughter, but we've given away tickets for that.
We have given away tickets that way.
We want to create a youth, like a young soccer culture here in Vegas.
Somehow tomorrow we're going to give away a bunch of lights tickets. I don't know how, but we're going to do that tomorrow. We'll figure that out. Player to be named later, tickets to be named later. But we're probably, tomorrow's going to be a packed show because we're going to figure out who wins these Mountain West basketball tickets as well tomorrow. So if you sent me a tweet or an email, be listening tomorrow. We're going to do that to give away these Mountain West tickets. We'll pick the best answers, and you guys will win based on who your favorite player is and why. We've got some good ones. We've got some funny ones, too. Funny one will probably get... There's some funny ones that will probably win. We're going to do that tomorrow. Figure out how to give away these lights tickets. Eric Winalda will be in studio. It'll be a fun day. It'll be a packed day. And we'll also talk about the Golden Knights in Flames for like all of 5 minutes. And then it'll be like, oh, God, we got to play Jesus Calls. Should we play Jesus Calls for Winalda?
That would be fun.
Let's do that.
It'd be
tomorrow.
Weird, but it'd be tomorrow. Fun.
Like, hey, this has nothing to do with you, Winalda, your team, or
but
your
also,
season.
But also, Winalda speaks Spanish.
Apparently.
Right?
Should we have him translate Jesus Lopez?
I kind of want to do that,
All right, that's what we're doing. Eric Winalda's Spanish will be put to the test tomorrow with Jesus Lopez Go Calls.
You suck, Tyler.